London Column. This is Lionel Gammon presenting a weekly radio digest of items headlined or modest, but all selected for your interest and entertainment from the worldwide services of the BBC. London Column. This week we bring you a description of the scene when Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth paid a visit to a training centre for disabled people not far outside London in the delightful county of Surrey. We hear at first hand of the wonderful reception accorded everywhere in the United States to the display of Queen Mary's hand-embroidered carpet. And finally we take you over to the famous Horse Guards Parade Ground in London for a commentary on a colourful and traditional military ceremony. Fifteen years ago, in 1935, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, then Duchess of York, opened a training centre for disabled men in Leatherhead, a pleasant country town not far from London, a centre which was subsequently called Queen Elizabeth's College and which is housed in Springbok House. Indeed, the college has received many generous gifts from the people of the Union of South Africa. Last week, the Queen returned to the college to open a new hostel there for women, and our reporter, Richard Dimbleby, attended the opening ceremony. Let him set the scene for you.
On the outskirts of Leatherhead, in Surrey, this is a typically English scene. And I say that because a moment ago, when the sun was shining brightly, the picture was a lively and colourful and happy and cheerful one, and yet essentially very informal. Now, just for the moment, the sun has gone behind a white cloud, one of the great white billowing masses of cloud that's floating rapidly across the sky, because there's a strong wind blowing across us all as we sit here on the top of a green hill, with the green hills and lanes and roads and the woods and the trees of Surrey, that lovely home county landscape spreading all around us right away to Dorking Gap and the hills behind which lies the sea.
It was in that lovely setting that Queen Elizabeth rose to make her opening speech.
It is 15 years since I first opened Queen Elizabeth's Training College. And since then, I've taken a very deep interest in its progress. So that it gives me great pleasure to be here once again, and for such an agreeable purpose. In those days, the idea that severely disabled people could, by a short period of training, be fitted for normal employment alongside the able-bodied was a very new one, and the college had little to sustain it save the faith and vision of its promoters. Since then, several thousand men and boys have passed through it into activity and independence. The college has become a pattern for others, and visitors from all parts of the world come to study its methods.
One of the most fascinating stories for every generation of children, I suppose, from time out of mind, has been that one about the magic carpet, that ever-exciting dream of flying about the world at will on a little strip of oriental rug. Well, within the last year, all of us in Britain have recaptured something of the magic of that old story, as we've heard of the magnificent carpet which that great and well-loved royal lady, Queen Mary, designed and embroidered as her personal contribution to the national export drive. Queen Mary's reputation as a fine artist in needlework has been known to us, of course, for many years, and we've all been delighted to learn that it's now been sold in Canada for no less than $100,000. Patricia Hardy, who is personal assistant to Lady Reading, the chairman of our Women's Voluntary Services, had the good fortune to be chosen to accompany the carpet on its tour. And Sheila Stewart is here now to ask Miss Hardy to tell you of some of her experiences on this unique and fascinating trip.
Have you any remembrance of the places you went to, or is that asking too much?
Oh, yes, indeed. I can give them to you all, but not in one breath, as I used to be able to do.
Oh, well, two breaths.
New York, Ottawa,
Washington, St. Louis, Kansas City, New Orleans, Dallas, Houston, Los Angeles, Pasadena, San Francisco, Seattle, Victoria, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, Toronto, Boston, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and Quebec and Montreal.
Well, I think that's very nearly one breath, I must say. And you had a wonderful reception, did you?
Absolutely wonderful. It's the most thrilling experience that I am ever likely to have in my life.
Were the people tremendously enthusiastic about the carpet?
Oh, overwhelmingly. I have never seen such enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
It was something which we didn't create either. It was something that was there.
Did they come from miles to see it?
Oh, yes, lots of times.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think it was 17 cities, and that leaving out an awful lot. Mm. And on many occasions we had people who came in specially to see Queen Mary's rug from quite long distances out.
Mm.
I remember one woman in Kansas City who came up to us and said that she had come in specially 300 miles away where she had a farm. And in order to make herself free that day, she had killed her pigs the day before.
I think that's very sweet and a nice gesture.
And I'm sure Queen Mary would be very flattered.
Well, we always think of Americans coming over here on a lightning tour of our country, but you've certainly been doing a magic carpet tour of America. Tell me, Patricia, I know one's always asked this, but what are your impressions, your principal impressions of that vast and wonderful country?
Well, we've been never more than four nights in any one city, but I think in all the impressions, that the outstanding one is of space.
Yes.
Vastness.
Mm.
Always a changing scene, and to each state you go is like going into a new country, really.
Yeah. And of the people?
Oh, of the people, an overwhelming kindness,
hospitality,
yes, readiness to help, friendliness, just beyond belief.
Yes.
And I have left, I know, some absolutely wonderful friends.
I know you have, because I've been back now from my last trip for nearly 4 years, and I've still got them. It is, as you say, an overwhelming kindness and hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
Simply wonderful. And did you find while you were over there the same love and devotion for that grand old lady that we have over here?
Oh, yes, indeed. And when you think that 400,000 people in 12 weeks in North America saw that rug,
mm-hmm,
came from long distances, mm-hmm, in order to see it, I think that compares very, very well with 100,000 people in 3 weeks in London.
I think it does indeed, yes. And I'm so glad it was such a success. And thank you for sparing a few moments from your first 24 hours at home to come and talk to us. Thank you, Patricia Hardy.
Finally, we turn to another British display, a display of a very different kind, though artistry also plays a part in the age-old military ceremony which is being staged at this present on one of London's most historic parade grounds, the famous Horse Guards Parade hard by Whitehall, flanked on one side by the squat ship-shaped Admiralty Building and on the other by the elegant little Georgian house known to the whole world as No. 10 Downing Street. Here, for some nights past, 250 bandsmen of that crack corps, the British Royal Marines, have been delighting huge crowds with their superb presentation of an old ceremonial drill known as Beating the Retreat. But let our reporter, Rennie Cutworth, tell you the story, for he was present at Horse Guards Parade.
This ceremony of beating retreat is very old. It was originally beaten on the drum at sunset to collect and post the guards and the people in camps of war, because in those days, fighting stopped at night. The bands are at the quick march again now, a march with plenty of bugles in it. And the parade is moving to the central part of the ceremony, a bugle fanfare, and then the retreat beaten on the drums. Retreat, and before it, the fanfare on 32 silver bugles, which, by the way, are a memorial to officers killed in the First World War. The score of the retreat, which was beaten just now, is dated 1810. And now for the finale, the bands are massed again, with the trumpeters on the flanks and the drums in the rear.
And now, back from the Horse Guards Parade to the studio for the postscript by our guest London columnist, MacDonald Hastings. Mac?
Well, as Humpty Dumpty said to Alice in Wonderland, there's glory for you. Queen Elizabeth, how charmingly she speaks. Queen Mary, what a very great woman. And the mass trumpeters of the Royal Marines. But what you've heard is an impression of high summer in this royal and colourful London scene. You know, only yesterday morning, my small son, aged 4, persuaded me to take him to see the daily ceremony of the changing of the guard at Buckingham Palace. We stood there together, pressing our noses to the iron railings round the palace yard, listening to the massed bands of His Majesty's Brigade of Guards, watching a scene as pretty as a box of lead soldiers arranged in a toy fort. Over the palace, the royal standard fluttered in the breeze. The lawns round about were gay with flowers. There was a blue sky overhead, and as the scarlet-coated guardsmen drilled in the grey stone palace yard, we saw behind us the household cavalry in golden helmets and breastplates, red plumes and pipe-clayed breeches, riding jet-black horses, clattering down the mall to mount the guard at the other end of St. James's Park. When we'd seen the guards march away from the palace, my little boy and I walked along the side of the ornamental lake nearby, watching the waterfowl piloting convoys of little ducklings and admiring the pelicans sleeping peacefully on their rock in the centre of the lake. Behind us, through a deep scene setting of trees and ornamental bridges, we could see the palace. On one side, the spires of Westminster Abbey and the cathedral. On the other, Queen Mary's standard flying over Marlborough House next to St. James's Palace. And in front, Admiralty Arch, the Horse Guards Parade, and the towers and minarets of Whitehall. If you live in a city, you're usually the last person to appreciate the thrill of it. But here in this royal city of London now, you haven't got to be one of the thousands of tourists to be moved by the atmosphere. During the war, we sometimes used to think that the romance and colour of it all would never come back. But you've only got to watch London's visitors excitedly shooting off film in their cameras to realise that we've already recovered to a very large extent the colour of life which makes this one of the great sightseeing capitals of the world. What makes it so? Well, you've heard several good reasons for it in this London column. This is one of the few great capitals of the world where we've still got a king and queen. And the pomp and ceremony attending royalty is still one of the most elegant and eye-filling things in the civilised world.
Well, goodbye, Mac, and it's goodbye too from this edition of London Column, a radio digest produced by Stephen Eckard, presented on this occasion by Lionel Gamlin, and which came to you in the North American service of the BBC.